Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast, brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huffines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in a language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host.
Hello and welcome to the weekly edition of the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance podcast. I'm Dr. John Thornton, director of the Texas A&M Coaching Academy, sitting in today for Dr. Tim Lightfoot. I want to thank you all for taking the time to listen, and we've got a special treat today, brought to you courtesy of the Coaching Academy. Our guest today is Ms. Carrie Patterson-Brown. Welcome to the podcast, Carrie.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to drive up from Houston, and actually came in and was a guest speaker at my class today, and I think our young men and women got a lot out of it. One of the things that we're doing in the Coach Academy is profiling the career and coaches that are involved in coaching. And with that, could you tell us a little bit of your background as far as what got you into coaching and some of the experiences you've had?
First, I want to begin by telling you thank you for allowing me to come speak with your class today. I learned a lot as well. So, see, I'm from Houston, Texas. I attended Jack Yates High School. As a student athlete at Yates, I was recruited by a bunch of different schools in the state of Texas. I chose A&M just because it's A&M, just of being, you know, the culture, the tradition, the legacy. It was just so much that brought me here to this campus. As a student athlete, I majored in English, and I played women's basketball. I'm sorry, I didn't say that. So when a position opened up on the coaching staff, I became one of the assistant coaches here. And truly what made me become a staff member, or what made me choose that job, was that I was learning a lot as a student athlete, so I wanted to continue to learn, and then I wanted to provide that knowledge to the students that were coming behind me.
So. Well, one of the things that I think that you will agree with me is that each coach's background or experience level is unique, and obviously from your start, it led to coaching in three different colleges, I think, the public school setting, and now you're involved in something that's pretty interesting undertaking down in the Houston area. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Okay. Yes, my experiences have lended me to started a charter school, and the charter school is called Legacy Collegiate Middle and High School for Careers in Health and Wellness. And the intent behind the school is to expose students and families to the professions within athletics. So we'll have a early college high school program, an elite athletic program, and then we'll have a profession within athletics program. And those professions will be coaching, athletic administration, sports journalism, and sports medicine. And what our intent is to show kids that there's more to athletics than just being the player on the field and on the court.
One of the things that we talked about in class, or I got to hear you talk about, is how the impact that coaches have a chance to have. And one of the things that you brought up in the class, obviously you think coaching and teaching go hand in hand.
Yes.
And your background's pretty extensive in the formation of youth as far as educational process as well as the coaching. So a little bit of the background about the classroom setting that you've been involved in.
Yes. So this was in 2001. When I left here, I became the head coach at Houston Tillerson University. It's a small HBCU, a historically black college university. And the funding there was, there was none. So I had to, along with being a head coach, I had to have another job, another source of income. So I became a ninth grade English teacher. My major here at A&M was English. And I received my teacher certification and became a ninth grade English teacher. Then I was a literacy coach, and then an instructional coach. And now I'm an adjunct instructor at San Jack Community College in Houston. But my biggest thing is the aha moment, and I think that you can get it in both ends, from the classroom and on the court. And what I truly believe is that if athletics drives a kid, then we need to allow that to drive a kid, but we just make sure that we point them in the right direction. So I've learned a lot on both ends, from the education, from the classroom, and from the game, the sport.
Well, let me ask you this. As far as you've kind of morphed, as a lot of coaches do, into a little bit, or segued into something else that's not directly related to competition. Mm-hmm. And what do you think you're going to miss most of when you leave that setting to go to the other setting? As far as, I mean, the aha moment is what you've said, is seeing the look on people's faces. Is there anything else that you're going to miss?
Well, right now I work with a it's an AAU program in Houston Elite, so I still get my itch scratched. You know, mm-hmm. I still get the feel of the game. Mm-hmm. But truly, I guess what I see that athletics provides is a camaraderie like no other. I mean, the student athletes or the people in general that are on the field, they have one common goal, and that's what's neat. That you generally don't see that a lot, and I miss that. That push for I will miss that common ground, you know, where everybody's pushing towards the same thing. So, but I still have my kids that participate in athletics, and I get to see that happen with them, and that's probably one of the most rewarding things is that I get to see that. You know, I get to see them, grow within the game, but also have one common goal with other kids with the same mindset. So,
well, let me ask you this. If we have listeners out there that either have individuals that they know are interested in coaching, or children that are interested in coaching, or themselves interested in coaching, are there any suggestions that after all the experience that you've had, you know, through the different opportunities you've had in your career, that you would say that people need to do or look out for, or whether it be related to networking, experience, are there some recommendations that you would have?
Yes, there are a lot of things that I could share, but I think the biggest thing is something that I just learned recently that I've talked to my son about. It's like getting a good network of people around you that want you to succeed, and where you're lending yourself to them, they're lending themselves to you. But y'all all want to grow. You know, mm-hmm. I think that's important within coaching, because you have to instill that in kids when you're working with young adults. So make sure that the people that you're around y'all are all looking to do the same thing. Not necessarily coaching, but just grow within some field. Mm-hmm. And if you have people that are stagnant or, just don't want to move forth, then those aren't the people that you need to be around.
Well, it's like surround yourself with people that have the same mindset,
exactly.
That want to be successful.
Yeah, that have good, they have like good values. And like I rate success in different manners. Like some people look at success as being, a billionaire, and then some people look at success as, just having a strong family and, enjoying their job, So whatever your success is, you find it, but you find it with a group of people that are, that are interested in success as well, So whatever that may be, they have some goal in mind, and y'all work together towards it.
Right. At this point in time in the podcast, I think there's kind of a bonus round here. We have Reggie Brown. I'm not going to say the better half or the lesser half. I think it's two equal halves here, but Reggie, former student athlete, Texas A&M, much like Kerry was, a Met here. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. And Reggie was All-American, All-Southwest Conference, played in the NFL, and looks pretty prosperous to me at this point. And I hadn't seen him in a while, but glad to have him here also. With that, Reggie, thanks for coming.
No, thank you for having me.
Well, one of the things I'd like to talk about as far as the coaching side of it is concerned, and I'm glad you're here, and the fact that it's a tough business. Mm-hmm. And we know that, the fact that it's a family and both professionals. What are some of the keys to balancing this as a coach?
When dealing with your family, I found that you look at the things that go into coaching. So it was more of, in my mind, I had the mental state, the ups and downs of coaching. I had my players that needed me. And when you have a family, you have the same exact thing. So my boys, they needed their mother, but I had a strong husband that believed in, he's going to do whatever is necessary for me to be happy in what I'm doing, and then for my team to be happy. So it was a lot of compromise, and not even that. He basically lended himself to my life. He did a great job of just being a support system for me. So, I mean, basically, it's just like hats off to him, because he was my backbone with this coaching career that I chose. So,
well, did he ever suggest out of bounds plays, Reggie? I'm going to ask you that. Did you critique her after games?
I would lend my little 2 cents of knowledge about basketball.
No, but he was great though, because
I knew about it, yeah. Or what I learned over the years from watching her.
Yeah. Well, I didn't have an assistant when I was at Houston Tillerson. So, well, I mean, I had people that were on and off that joined every once in a while. But Reggie did a great job of, like, he was my reflector when I needed to go back, and we talked about the game. He was like, well, I saw this and I saw that, and that was good, and my players loved him. He was their other figure in their life, a man figure in their life. So they would go talk to him as well. So he was great.
So you both lived it, although one was actually, that was their livelihood.
Exactly.
Reggie, what's your thoughts on that? What are some of the keys for having a successful family, marriage, career?
Well, I think going into it, knowing, say with my athletic background, knowing how much my coaches put into it hour-wise and, you know, like say time and effort, and knowing that's what Carrie's passion was, it was something I kind of expected. And once I saw she was, you know, committed herself to, was serious about it, that's what she wanted to have for a career, just like anybody else. You know, you're going to support your spouse and what they want to do. Just this certain profession takes a lot of man/woman hours, you know, to be the best at what you do. And if you have that certain drive and passion, which she does, you know, I can only do nothing but salute her and say, you know, if that's what you want to do, fine. Now, I wasn't happy with it, you know, 100% of the time. But like I say, I knew going into it what to expect, so it didn't just catch me off guard. Like I say, when I played in Detroit, you know, all the players are gone at 5 o'clock, but the coaches, I know they stayed there till 11 o'clock midnight. But I know that's on a professional level. Even our, you know, college coaches, they had entire staff with the vast resources A&M has and the resources, you know, Houston Tillotson had when she was there, and she was the only coach / academic advisor /
bus
parent,
driver,
parent liaison. I think that's all I had was a bus driver.
Sometimes I drove.
Oh yeah, sometimes she did drive. Yeah. So I knew the stresses, you know, that she would probably be dealing with. I didn't know from firsthand knowledge, but you know, just hearing from her and kind of seeing the experiences she went through, I really had any problem with it.
Yeah, well, it probably helped a lot in the fact that your background was so related to athletics, so you had a great perspective or insight of what was going on.
Yeah, I think that goes into our relationship also. You know, things I've gone through in my athletic background, you know, I can, and you just her being an athlete as well, we can both kind of relate, even though we're total opposites. We can both have that similar thing in our history is, you know, she can understand I'm not in the best of moods. She might not be in the best of moods, even though majority of the time she is in a good mood.
That tells a little bit about who's bringing what to the table, about the good moods. And one of the here's one of the things that I think is unique in the podcast ability here. I don't know if we've ever had two former student athletes at Texas A&M that met here, married, two children, both very successful, and athletics is a big part of your lives. Obviously, with you, Carrie, it ended up being a career for you. Mm-hmm. Reggie, also the different things that you've undertaken in your professional career. Where and when did you come up with the realization of what your future path was going to be as far as a career was concerned? I mean, because of, you know, we all know this, that sometimes student athletes focus. It's the sport. That's what they've done their entire lives. Was there any kind of troubles as you went through trying to figure out where you're going to go and what you were going to do?
I think when we had kids, I knew that at some point I was going to have to stop coaching just because of being supportive and being able to see my kids go through, you know, play their sport. And then as far as with the school, with the opening of Legacy, you know, in August of 2016, it's dealing with my oldest son and dealing with my youngest son, looking at their different personalities and who they are as young men. I knew we needed to have a school that was something like this. So it was, I guess, probably 5 or 6 years ago when my thought process came about with building Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like 5 or 6 years ago. And really, because, and my oldest son is my muse. So I look at him every day and I'm like, there has to be a program like this because there are truly a lot of kids that are similar to him. So, you know, educating them just not on the, you know, just I think that we could co-mingle those two things together, athletics and education, and then allow that to drive a kid. So I realized 5 years ago that this is my pathway. This is what God has put me here for. So
awesome. Looking forward to being a partner with you as you bring this thing forward. Reggie, let me ask you this. Coming to Texas A&M, having a great career, choosing a degree path for yourself as you were here, and then having that manifest itself in what you're going to do as you're going to do the rest of your life, you've always been a serious guy, as we've always talked about. Do you consider the fact that you were that serious early on in your educational process, or did you, you know, mature as you went through and exposed here at Texas A&M?
I think I matured as I went on. When I first got here, when I first stepped on campus, I was still 17 years old. So I was still trying to figure things out, and I didn't redshirt. So I was like the youngest in my recruiting class. one of the very few that actually played. And I didn't come in. I don't think I was prepared, as Legacy would have a student prepared when they make it to college. I was pretty much, like I say, the youngest, probably didn't have any thought of a major, you know, thought about it several times. Didn't have a lot of college graduates in my family. So I was pretty much one of the first, if not the first, that graduated from college. There's been several after me that were older than me, but several after me that went on and got a college degree. So I don't think I was prepared as I should have been. But I think as I matured and got older and, like I say, been around so many different people from different backgrounds, I think it kind of, like I say, let my mind matriculate to a point of, okay, you got to get serious. And plus my background, I'm probably one of those instances where, you know, a lot of people say you can't play forever. You never know when your last play is. And my injury kind of showed people, hey, here's somebody you know that tried to do everything the right particular way, and career was short, cut short on one fluke play. So now it's the now what kind of instance. So I'm kind of that poster child of being prepared. And just luckily, I was surrounded by people that I've met along the way that could kind of, you know, once I finished playing, I came back to A&M. Okay, let me take some classes, go back and finish my degree. And I remember talking to Carl Mooney, which was our academic advisor at that point in time. And I said, I think I want to start in the fall. I want to take the summer off. He said, no, you're going to start second summer session. The next opportunity, don't wait. Get started. So that kind of push. And when I finished playing, by far the classes were so much easier as I came back as a 23-year-old.
Right.
Instead of coming in as a 17-year-old with having no clue. I'm this new surrounding. Everybody's saying howdy to me. I have no idea what's going on. You know, all I know is the football team and campus is that way.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, here's your map of the, here's your schedule. Here's the map of the campus. See you at 2:30 for meetings.
All I know is you two are a great story, and individually, but even a better story together. And it's one of the kind of things that I really appreciate that y'all have taken the time to come up here, and look forward to, you know, following up and staying in touch as we go forward with your legacy and Reggie with your background and what you're doing. And obviously we'll be following a couple of kids too, I think, pretty soon here as far as, you know, tell us about your children.
Yes. So my oldest is, our oldest is Reginald Brown, and we call him Reggie, and he's 13. And then our youngest is Michael Brown, and he's named after his uncle, Big Reggie, the oldest, his brother. So it's Reggie and Michael, and Reggie and Michael, and he's six. So both student athletes, well, in the younger version, obviously, but they are, they're great kids.
Yeah. But quite different.
Yeah, they are. It's funny because they're opposite, like Big Reggie and I are. But they're, I mean, I enjoy every day. You know, you look at them and you're like, thank you, God, for giving us these two, because they're very, they'll test you. But at the same time, I mean, it's a reward every day. So,
well, let me ask you one more thing in closing. Is there one takeaway message that either one of you would like to share?
Mine is empowering your students with choices, you know. So I think that that's a big thing from a coaching perspective, because if you teach them how to make good decisions, or if you teach them how to do things within your system that are just not one way, teach them that there are many ways to get things done, then I think that you're lending them to become successful young adults or successful adults. So not just saying this is the only way that we're going to be able to do things, but let's try to figure out how we can do things that come up with this one common goal. So I think empowering kids with choices is something that I've learned from a coaching perspective along the way. And within your system, you know, so you don't give them all these choices that have nothing to do with what you're trying to get done. But within your system, you empower them with their choices and allow them to educate themselves.
Well, I'd like to give, I guess, Reggie's parting shot, because I know him well enough. He's not a fan of that. He's got one system his way. Not really. Reggie, do you have anything you'd like to you leave anybody with?
I would say, as far as coaching goes, I would say to for an up-and-coming coach, or even a coach who's been doing it for a while, just realize the power of their words, power of their examples that they set, and how much an athlete will remember and hold on to almost everything you say, whether good or bad, positive or negative. And I was fortunate to have, you know, so many coaches throughout my career, you know, high school, professionally, and even here at Texas A&M. You know, I had four three different defensive coaches in 4 years, but we always still had a top five defense every year. But each of them, each coach I had their own personality. And I still spit out so many different sayings from so many different coaches. And I, you know, I probably tell my kids too much. I say, a coach told me once, you know, blah, 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 blah. But like I say, those power of those words and how much that can motivate a kid and keep them on track and keep them doing the right thing.
That's a wonderful take home right there. And we all know the influence that coaches and teachers can make on you. That's a great way to end. First of all, thank you for being here. I know it was a trip to get up here, and really enjoyed getting to reconnect and have you come to my class.
Well, thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure.
The Sports Medicine Podcast is produced by Kelly Selman and Aidlint Letzinger and licensed by the Huffines Institute at Texas A&M under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. You can share it as much as you want, and you can talk or blog about it all you want. Just don't change it or charge money for it. This podcast is made possible by support from the Omar Smith family and the Sidney and J.L. Huffines family. Our music was composed, performed, and graciously provided by Dave Zeltner Productions, your source for quality music and music production since 1992. Find them at www.davidzeltner.com. Our opening and closing credits were provided by johnmilesproductions.com. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.